Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you along today because we've got a real treat for you. Melinda Meyer is our guest with us by phone today, Milwaukee-based gardening guru, the author of more than 20 books, and she's been a regular on Garden Talk for, I'm not even sure how many years. Been a long time now, and it's always great to have her with us. This is the kind of the time of year when we do a little garden planning, and that's kind of looking forward to the warmer temperatures, although temperatures have been pretty warm for the most part across Wisconsin. We had a 50-degree day yesterday. Looks like in southern Wisconsin, looks like it's going to be in the 40s again today in parts of southern Wisconsin, mid to high 40s. So certainly doesn't feel like January to me. Maybe it does to you where you live. You have a question or comment for Melinda. I hope you'll join in. Or maybe you've got something to share, maybe a photo to share. If you do, if you have a photo to share or a question, you might go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. Love to have that. We've got some really cool pictures up there, photos up there right now. Phil sent us some that are a look back a year ago. And I think you might find that interesting. You might have some of your own. I hope you'll join in. You can also phone us, of course, at 1-800-642-1234. And you can go to our email us as well at talk@wpr.org. And let me see if we've got Melinda on the phone here. Melinda, are you there?
I am, Larry. Great chatting with you. And you're right. Wow, it's hard to believe it's January.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I'm still not ready for snow, to be perfectly honest, although I think we really need some. I would love to have some snow on the ground before we get those really, really cold temperatures that take the frost way down, that really freeze the ground up.
Yeah, we really could use some snow, though. I think, like all of us, I'm doing a garden walk for Burner, a winter garden walk a week from Saturday.
Oh.
And planning it yesterday was, wow, 42 degrees, and we weren't dragging through a foot of snow. The landscape's still beautiful. Snow is nice, but boy, it was a lot easier hiking.
Oh, hiking around. Well, sure. So what's this family fun walk all about?
Well, we're doing two. We're once again, this is our third year of doing walks at Burner to get people out, see the gardens, learn more about plants, enjoy one of the gems of Wisconsin. And we're doing two things on the 14th. The morning walk at 10 is avid gardeners or just adults that want to get out. But then in the afternoon at 1 o'clock, it's going to be family walks. So kids, adults, anybody that wants to walk through, we're going to look at giant trees, measure trees, do bark rubs, really get the kids and families. And I find we're all kids at heart.
Yes, we are.
So it's going to be a little different focus in the afternoon. So it's something for everybody. Morning for the more hardcore. I want to take a hike and look at trees and learn about trees and shrubs and some of the big old ancient trees, ancient and, you know, hundreds of years. And some of the older plantings that Burner's so lucky to have. And then the afternoon's just same kind of looking at some of those big trees, but having a little bit more of a fun and childlike approach to it. So we're hoping we can get lots of people out there. We've got quite a few signed up, but we still have room. And it's always a good group. And anybody that hikes outside in January has got to be fun, right?
That's right. And I assume, can they go to your website to sign up? Or
you bet. If they go to my website, melindameyers.com, there's a link right to Burner Botanical Gardens, or they can call at 414-525-5659. That's Burner, the Friends of Burner Botanical Gardens, our partners, along with wonderful sponsors who help make this possible. And the proceeds go to children's education, not to my pocket, but to children's education. So it's a great opportunity to support a good cause and have some fun.
And I know there are, through the year, you've got in May, and I know in July, October, you've got other walks there, and those are obviously going to be a lot of fun, too. And you're going to have information about those on your website.
You bet. It's all there. If you sign up for all, you get a little bit of a deal. But if you're like, I'm not into January walks, you can visit virtually. Or if you live too far away and you're not driving in, visit my website after the walk. We post photos, the handouts, so you can learn something, even if you're not in the neighborhood.
There you go. Well, take a look at gardening. Let's take a look at last year's garden for a minute. And by the way, let me give that number again. If you have a question or comment for Melinda here as we move along. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. What did well in your garden this past year?
You know, it's always an amazing thing. My perennials looked pretty good. I actually had great containers. I got a late start, but, you know, the weather was so cool, I don't think anybody realized. I caught up with everyone really quickly. So my containers were probably my favorite part. They always are. I tried some new tomatoes. Not my best tomato year, but I got some great peppers and some fun new eggplants I got to try. Some new annuals. So, you know, I really had some good luck with some of the new calibrachoas that are being introduced next year. There's a new pansy coming out. Ball Horticulture sent me samples of wave pansy, a bit of a trailing pansy. Hmm. Popped them in the garden in October. They'll be out next year. So they are, I still have a few blooms on those chilled plants, but I'm excited to see how they come through the winter for spring.
So that sounds wonderful. Well, we had tomatoes. We had some big containers for tomatoes.
Excellent.
And you know they were okay, but they were really late.
Yes, the cool weather. You're so right. The cool weather was just really tough on our plants, and tomatoes like it hot and they like it warm, and so it's really very challenging to get them going. So I think a lot of us suffered. I brought a lot of green tomatoes in this year and ripened them indoors. You too, counters full of tomatoes, you know, a few fried green tomatoes on the dinner menu. And, you know, I think one of the cool things about gardeners, why I love what we get to do, Larry, is we get, you know, you got to be a little crazy to garden every year. So I think that's kind of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Judith, our producer, says she usually isn't too big on annuals, but she's really in love with growing nasturtiums, is it? Nasturtiums?
Oh, nasturtiums.
Nasturtiums, yeah.
They are wonderful, and they're great to eat. They have a nice peppery taste. The foliage, the leaves look nice in salads. The flowers are edible. And I'm not much of a gourmet cook, so I eat trick. So, you know, grow some greens, harvest them, throw them on a plate, put a few nasturtium leaves. Alaska or Jewel of Africa, great variegated varieties that have pretty, you know, streaks of cream in the leaves, and then a couple flowers, and your friends think you're a good cook.
Well, you know, a lot about eating is in the, you know, looking, you know, what it looks like.
You know, it all tastes better if it looks good. Good.
Absolutely. No question about it. Well, what process, do you have a little planning process that you go through for getting, you know, thinking about your garden, getting it ready for?
You know, one of the things are the catalogs coming in. I think all of us just kind of look through and try to get ideas. And now we're inundated with things on the Internet. So, you know, I'm signed up on a lot of lists, so I try to look through. I'm really bad. If you looked at my patio right now, I have more plants than space. I'm overwintering a few things. Actually, my daughter bought a home a year ago, so I'm helping her fill that up, and another friend who's doing some landscaping. So I'm looking for yards to put some of my children in, those plants in. So I always like to try new things just because I feel like I need to, so I can answer questions, and I'm a gardener, so I love to do it. I try to evaluate what's going on in my landscape, make notes of times that it's not looking its best. You know, it's like, wow, it's a little dull right now. So then I try to visit a botanic garden or look at photos of gardens at the same time.
Yeah.
So that I can go, okay, that would be perfect in this spot, or I need to add these new plants. You know, usually I'm trying to find homes for old things that I need to replace because I want to try something new. But, you know, every year is different, as you know, Larry.
Yeah.
Every year is challenging. And I think one of the things, if we can help people that are new to gardening understand, is we all make mistakes, and it's okay.
Well, I have a blank palette.
Oh.
In our backyard, in our new place, we literally just took everything out of the backyard for a variety of reasons. But at any rate, we leveled it out, and put some grass seed down late. I mean, it didn't have time to sprout, and it was done on purpose that way. So I don't know what's going to happen in spring, but all we have in the back now is lawn, and that's going to change.
I can hear the hands rubbing and the ideas.
But for now, I look out in that backyard, and there is nothing there, and I've never had a yard like that. So,
and it can be intimidating, can't it? You know,
yeah.
Sometimes you think, wow, I could plant anything, but then, wow, I can plant anything. And I think one of the things, this is a great time of the year for northern gardeners to take advantage of. We can't work in the yard, except maybe a little pruning or whatever, but really, who knows what winter will bring. So I like to wait a little bit for my pruning, but it's a chance to plan. Look at the views. Where do you tend to sit and look out the window? You know, or your kitchen, doing dishes, cooking, or whatever, and looking out, sitting in the family room. When you come home or go to work, you know, what greets you? I like to have fragrant plants by my garage, so when I come out of the garage at the end of the day, it smells good, or at the front entrance for my guest. You know, I like things that change up. I call it the alley garden. It's on the garden by my alley that needs to be low maintenance, but I want it to be really nice for my neighbors so that, you know, I'm connected to my neighbors, so I have a little privacy. And so I, you know, I've got some roses and some Walker's Low Catmint, and then I try to squeeze in, I have an elderberry. I have a few too many plants that probably need moving, actually. But, you know, try to squeeze in some things. So I think this is a great time as we're frustrated that we can't garden, that we can look for changes, start making that list. You know, I don't know about you, but I usually have way more plants than room, and then start, you know, going, okay, really, I don't need that. Oh, it's not going to fit here, and, you know, I can't grow that, you know. And then I start shopping, and then that's, you know.
Do you use tools, graph paper, colored pencils, or maybe an app for a smartphone for planting?
You know, if you're doing bulbs, iMyGarden, they did it for spring flowering bulbs, and I'm sure they'll have the summer flowering bulb app. So that's one thing. There are a lot of, Ball Horticulture has one, too.
Oh.
So Simply Plants. There are a lot of places, if you just go online garden, there's quite a few. I'm a plant placer in reality. I always tell everyone, get out the graph paper, measure. You know, that dining room table I bought was too big for the dining room. You know, didn't look that big. Should have measured better. You know, when I did my balcony and bought furniture, I did that so it would all fit the plants and the furniture. You know, and so I think even if you sketch, if you have kids, catalogs are great. Let them cut out pictures of their favorite plants and glue them onto paper. Gets them involved in the process.
I like that idea.
Kids that are learning math, get them out there with the ruler and get them measuring and get them drawing. You know, you could have everybody use their skills. You have an artist, have them render the picture of what they think the gardens look like. The photographer taking photos of what it looks like now and throughout the year. So I think, you know, we're passionate about gardening, but not everybody shares that same passion. But if they bring their passion to the landscape, it's a great way to have the whole family involved.
You know, we should probably take some phone calls.
Okay, that's
probably not a bad idea.
Others might want to join us.
And I'll give that number again. It's 1-800-642-1234. I have an open line or two. We can get you on fairly quickly. Sharon in Plum City, it is your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, this is a very timely topic, and thank you for this program.
Sure.
We have a community garden in our town, and in that community garden, we have a limited amount of space. We grow food for our food pantry.
Excellent. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. We're glad to do it. And our problem is, of course, we have the usual plants, potatoes, tomatoes, green beans, cucumbers, and we have been rotating these last 2 years, but now we're kind of limited in our space. And I'm afraid, I've heard, is this true, that the same beetle that bothers the potato beetle that bothers the potatoes, if you stop growing the potatoes because you're tired of fighting that, that they will then go to the tomatoes? Is that true? And what if we are limited, what other suggestions would you have that in moving plants around that we can utilize in our garden?
Sure.
You know, soil is such an important foundation. So I have a small garden. I used to run the community garden program in Milwaukee. And So you do have a challenge. It seems like you have a lot of space, but not really, and especially when you're raising certain crops. I have a small vegetable garden personally, so my tomatoes go from one end to the other, you know, and that's about as much as I can rotate. But I really work on the soil, adding lots of compost and organic matter, using an activated compost, something that has a lot of microbial activity. So by amending your soil, it helps strengthen your plants to help reduce problems. There's also a product, and if you run into problems or you're feeling your plants aren't doing as well, it's a plant strengthener. And this is a whole new category of plants, products, and they're natural enzymes that scientists found when plants were under stress, they produced this. And it's a jasminoid. And when they extracted it and applied it to other plants, it didn't kill insects and diseases, but it made the plants more tolerant of insect disease and stresses like drought and things like that. And so that's a natural product. Jazz spray, JZ being one of those, that might be something to consider, you know, for people who are struggling like you do, limited space to really rotate your crops. If you can rotate out a family, tomatoes, potatoes, eggplants being related, followed by beans or lettuce, that's always very helpful, if possible. So soil prep, you know, plant strengtheners if needed, rotating to your best of your ability. Potato beetles aren't a huge problem on tomatoes, huge on Nicotiana, flowering tobacco, but you need to monitor and watch for those insects, you know, knocking them into a can of soapy water. Bacillus thuringiensis, one strain is good for controlling the larva of beetles, but it is getting hard to find. So it's really hand-picking. I think, Larry, it was on your show, somebody called in and she vacuums them.
Yep.
You know, and I've just always wanted to drive by her garden someday and see her out vacuuming. You know, and those are fun jobs for kids. If you have kids involved in gardens, they love bugs. They love, at the Hamilton Royal Botanic Garden in Canada, they did the pluck, drop, and stomp method. They'd pluck the insects, drop them, and the kids would stomp them. And you know what else is good? They have a lot of energy, so maybe they'll burn off a little bit. So I think that's one of the things that you might be able to try. Hope that helps.
Well, thank you. We'll try that. We have been mulching. We do a lot of leaf mulching and then till it under.
Excellent. And the other thing I didn't mention are floating row covers, too. I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah.
It is a cost, so I don't know if that's in your budget, but you can reuse them. But covering your plants, they let air, light, and water through, but keep the bugs off. Good for bean beetles. They probably help with some extent with the potato beetle on potatoes. Great for the cabbage worms to keep them off your cabbage, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts, too.
All good ideas. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And our guest today, Melinda Myers, our gardening guru from Milwaukee. She's with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Melinda Myers, our guest for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. She's answering the phones today with her usual bright and lively voice. And it's great to have her behind the phone. Great to have you listening in. If you have a question, I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And if you've got some photos, we would love to see those photos as well. And Phil sent us some photos. He said, remember spring of last year. So he's got this past year, April 18th. January, March, April 18th. He's got some photos of what the plants look like.
Oh, wow. Hard to...
With about 4 inches or 5 inches of snow on them.
Exactly. I'm looking at those two going, well, you know, maybe this warm weather's okay. Our plants will find a way to survive. And it's a lot easier than shoveling.
Oh, man. Well, Dirk in Milwaukee has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Dirk.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I would like to grow some vegetables or fruit in my front yard, and I have an enormous oak tree, and it would only receive afternoon sun starting about 1 o'clock, but later in the afternoon it would be pretty full. Do you have any suggestions?
Great question, and I'm glad you bring this up. I'm going to kind of start with shade in general, and then we'll get to the sun, more sun sunny conditions. All vegetables do best in full sun, but those that you're eating the leaves, your leaf crops like leaf lettuce, kale, Swiss chard, are the most shade tolerant, so they can get by with about 4 hours of direct sun a day or bright light for half of the day. So those could go in your sunnier spots. Root crops, radishes, beets, turnips need a little more, 4 to 6 hours of sun. Anything you're eating the fruit, the most sunlight. Now, with an oak tree, not only is the light an issue, but you also have the problem with moisture. You've got the roots of the oak tree competing with the vegetables for water, so that can be a challenge. And when it, you know, they block the rain from coming down, so a lot of rain doesn't get to the vegetables underneath the canopy. And then in addition, the oak takes the rain right away. So you're going to have to watch the watering. It may be a little differently than your garden out in full sun or other parts of your yard. So I try to monitor the light, plant accordingly. Far as fruit goes, most fruit like full sun. Raspberries can take a little shade, but they won't get as many fruit. Currants and gooseberries obviously will also take some shade. More disease problems. So if you can, keep your fruit in the sunniest part. And half a day is usually pretty good for most of those as well. So keep the sunnier spots for them. And again, you're going to have to monitor. If you're digging around the roots of the trees, this is as a certified arborist, I always like to make my cause for the trees. Try to minimize the damage to the root zone. You don't want to bury the root zone of your trees, especially oaks, because you can increase their chance of decline and death. You want to minimize that digging. So keep, you know, that regular planting, those annual plantings, as far away as you can from the trunk of the tree, or minimize the area under that crown of the tree where you're digging up the soil constantly.
There you go. Good.
Excellent. Well, thank you for the advice.
Yeah, good luck, Dirk.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And containers, even containers under trees, allow you to control the soil, too, a little bit, and you can move them if it's not quite sunny enough.
Yeah, that's right. We use them a lot. Shelley in Duluth, Minnesota. Your turn. Hi, Shelley.
Yes, hello. I have a suggestion of something very helpful that you can do during the winter in preparation for the spring planting.
Excellent.
Which has to do with seed tape. You know how tiny seeds like carrots and lettuce are available in tape form, but the varieties are very limited and it's quite expensive. But I see this year is available a kind of tape that you can assemble by yourself with your own seeds. And at least for me, that's a very helpful thing. I know when it's time to plant, I'm in a hurry. I always end up having to do a tremendous thinning job with carrots and lettuce. But with this kind of tape, you can very carefully on a winter day just plunk them on. It has some sort of an adhesive. But it looks like a very helpful thing.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I do Melinda's Garden Moments, and we've got 34 new segments coming. And one of the first ones we cover is dealing with small seeds. And I'd show you how to make your own seed tape with newspaper. And you use either cornstarch or flour and water to about the thickness of pancake batter. And that's your glue, and you can put the seeds right on it at the proper spacing. And that's what I never even thought about. You know, in those days when you just can't stand being inside not gardening, what a great use of time.
Yes.
And then you're ready for planting. You can stick those in a baggie in your refrigerator, store them until you're ready to plant. Excellent idea. So it'll be airing, I think we're still in Duluth. You were one of the first, you have been loyal, they've carried Melinda's Garden Moments up in Duluth since the beginning.
Oh.
But yeah, so watch for that, and it's in Madison as well, so kind of keep an eye out, and it's always on my website after they air on TV, then we post them. So that'll be one of our segments this year, but great suggestion, Shelley. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much, Shelley. Nancy and Delavan, what's on your mind?
Hello.
Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I'm in a low-income apartment, and they do have gardening space, but they don't have transportation. So I've been kind of experimenting with things in my house. And I'm growing avocado trees.
Excellent.
Yeah, is that a shade tree or a sun tree? And do I put it outside in the summertime, or is it best to keep it in the house?
One of the challenges, it's always fun to do avocados, and I've done a couple of, I also do radio tips, and they're posted on my website, and I just talked about doing kitchen scrap gardening, and I put avocados, grapefruit seeds, orange seeds, all those fun things to do. A good sunny window. Now, the benefit of taking them outside is they get good light, good, you know, they'll put on a lot of growth. The downside is it's an adjustment going out and an adjustment coming in, yeah. And sometimes insects hitch a ride.
Well, I'm on the north side, and it seems to be doing pretty good.
You know, I would say if you've got, if it's doing okay in your house, I would enjoy it. It's,
yep.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Then you don't have to hassle with it.
No, I have it in a terracotta pot. How big does this plant get?
It's really going to only be limited by the amount of light you have. You know, if we were living in California, we'd have, they'd be huge trees, you know, trees the size of an apple tree. But in the home, I haven't really met anyone that's outgrown the house, and you can always prune it to keep it down to size.
Oh.
You eventually can get a nice size tree indoors.
Oh, I also have orchids, and I want to know, what do I use for fertilizer?
You know, any dilute solution of a flowering plant, house plant fertilizer works fine, and orchids, kind of let any of your plants be the guide. This time of year, if your house plants are just getting by, it's best not to fertilize. Wait till the days get longer, the light intensity a little better, and then you're going to have, you know, then the plants are going to start to grow and need more nutrients. Right now, for most of us, with the gray days, shorter days of winter, though it's hard to remember after yesterday.
Yeah.
They're not putting on as much growth. So let your plants be the guide. And my theory with fertilizer is you can always add more. You can't take it away. So dilute the recommended amount with the soluble fertilizers. And if you think it needs some more, you can always add that in a couple of weeks.
There you go. Thank you, Nancy, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And more callers online. We got an email question from Sharon in Green Bay. She writes, I was reading a book recently, found out that the weed that I have growing around my compost pile is deadly nightshade. I've been trying to garden organically. Is there a way to get rid of this without resorting to Roundup? I'd rather not use it if I can get away with it. I've heard about using boiling water to kill weeds. Would that work?
You know, boiling water can. You want to make sure you don't hit other plants and the roots of desirable plants nearby. Pulling is always a good starting point, and a lot of municipalities will let you throw weeds and clear plastic bags into the landfill, into your garbage. There's also a new product. It's a chelated iron, and it's considered organic. And I know Whitney Farms, I think Ortho has a, there's a couple of different brands that carry it. But what it does is it's toxic to the plant. So the iron is toxic to the plant, and it kills it. And I've used it on weeds in the lawn, okay, and not killed the grass because of the way those plants take it up. So you want to check the label, and if it's just around your compost bin and there's nothing else growing or just grass growing, you might want to give that a try because it seems to kill the top and the roots. But the most organic thing is to pull it, but then you have to keep watching if you don't get the roots and then any seeds that have dropped, you know, you're going to have to keep an eye on it. And maybe just throw some mulch. I have wood chip mulch around my compost bin just because it just keeps the other plants down and, you know, it's just a nice little barrier between the compost bin and the garden.
Good points. Let's go to Pat in Fond du Lac next. Hi, Pat.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Good. No problem. My wife and I went vegetarian a couple of years ago, and we also like to eat as organic as possible, and we realized that we were spending a fortune on vegetables. So last year, for the first time in either one of our lives, we decided to start our own garden. And we had some really good success. We had some really delicious vegetables that came up. But I planted a couple of broccoli plants, and I got the first heads, the first harvest of heads off there, great big beautiful heads, and they were soft and tender and delicious. And I noticed there were a lot of other little, what looked like heads starting on there, so I left the plants. And about the time those heads were about 3 or 4 inches in diameter, all of a sudden I went out one morning and they had all these little yellow flowers on them. And I did a little research and realized that once they flower, they're still edible, but they get bitter is what I found out. So I'm just wondering, should I have maybe picked some of those other heads out and just clipped them off and let some of the other ones grow a little bigger. What did I do wrong there?
You didn't do anything wrong. One of the challenges I find for me with broccoli is getting it in early enough so that I get a good harvest because it tastes better in cooler temperatures. I typically do mine as a summer planting and a fall harvest. I'm at home in the summer more, and I can get it in the ground, and then I'm harvesting in cool weather, and I'll tolerate even a light frost. The flavor's better. What you did was fine. Cut the main head. Let the little sprouts start to grow, but monitor it. And then you're going to harvest them. They're going to be much smaller, like broccolini, actually. And then you'll just use them as smaller pieces instead of letting them form the larger head. Because usually if it's your summer crop, by the time those second flush of flower buds is what we're eating, are starting to grow, it's getting hot, they ripen faster, and then they go into flower. Like you said, you can still eat them. The flavor just isn't as good, just right. The heat alone. So, you know, pick your main harvest, then as they get to be a decent size, harvest those, and then try to do a summer planting for a fall harvest if you didn't try that already.
No, I didn't. We actually planted on Mother's Day.
Okay, which last year was pretty
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
To got them in. And we didn't really have hot weather till late. So, you know, if you can get them in even earlier using the row covers, check out a product called Remay or Harvest Guard or Fast Grass. But that lets air, light, and water through but captures the heat. So for those of us that want to get a jump start on the season, or if you plant late, I use it on my tomatoes, and it gets me, pushes them ahead a little bit, even if I get a late start to the season.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Pat.
Best of luck this year. It'll be even a better harvest, I'm sure.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And thanks to Leslie, by the way, who posted on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show some asters that are just gorgeous. Fall asters, just gorgeous, with a monarch butterfly, I believe, in there as well. It's a great photo, and I hope others go online and take a look at it. It's just beautiful.
Well, and she brings up a good point. When you're planning your garden, I think trying to track birds and butterflies is a great way to add some beauty, color, and motion to your landscape. So it's a good reminder that as you're planning, think of some of those things that might bring wildlife that doesn't eat everything in your yard that you want to attract.
Darcy in Brookfield, we turn to you. Hi, Darcy.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a house where most of my plants that I have in my house die. So I'm struggling. I brought in a jasmine this year, and I had called in to previous show and asked about how to take care of it. And I think I may have over-fertilized it. I just heard you talking about that. So most of my leaves are dropping off, but I am seeing some green, healthy leaves still on the plant. Can I just keep nursing it along, don't fertilize it, water it well, and keep it in that great big window?
That would be perfect. And one of the problems that happens, and I'm in my office at home, and my every window in my house is filled with plants that I couldn't stand to let die, including a jasmine, okay? And one of the things is a lot of times when you bring them in, you get a lot of leaf drop. The light intensity is much less, one-tenth just by moving your plants indoors. And if you miss watering or you fertilize when they're under stress, you can cause leaf drop. But you're right, just wait, because you might see growth from the bottom. And as long as you're getting signs of new growth, water thoroughly as needed. Too much water can be just as harmful. And then wait to fertilize. So it sounds like it could have been just adapting to the indoor conditions, or it was adapting and you stressed it just a little bit, but obviously not enough to kill it. So I wouldn't give up on it.
Okay, because the leaves do have some mottling, and they do turn yellow, and then they drop off.
I'm assuming you have drainage holes in the pot?
Yes.
And then one of the things I like to do is just elevate my plants in the container so I can water thoroughly, and the excess just collects beneath the pot.
Okay.
And then when the water evaporates, it increases humidity, which is good for the plants. And I'm kind of lazy, so I don't have to pour the excess off. So you don't get root rot then either. So that might be something, too, if you water thoroughly and they're sitting in water constantly. That can lead to browning and yellowing of leaves as well.
Okay, and then I'm looking forward to the spring when I can take it back outside, but I would like to prune it back.
You know, and there are two reins of thought. I usually leave my plants intact, bring them in feeling like the more leaves, the better. But then I just went through and cleaned up and pruned off, and they were just too big, so I kind of pruned things down. With hibiscus, I know we're talking jasmine, but anybody with hibiscus, get your pruning done by the end of February so that you get blooms in the spring. And with your jasmine, I would do the same. I would get your pruning done February,
okay,
so that you have time to get the vegetative growth, leaves and stems coming back. You know, I'd let it recover a little bit first, get some good growth going, then do your pruning, and that way you'll get flowers, you know, because the jasmine tend to bloom late spring, early summer.
Right.
If we're lucky, they'll repeat again in the, later in the season.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Clinton.
Good luck with that.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, Melinda, you were mentioning earlier when we were talking about the asters, the photo of the asters.
Right.
That
beautiful.
Beautiful photo. And it sort of brought to mind when you mentioned motion in the garden, it brought to mind that you are presenting, you've got a presentation coming up, what, tomorrow or the next day?
Sunday. I'll be at the Milwaukee Builder Show and talking about bringing birds and butterflies into the landscape, as well as a flavorful landscape. So how you can mix vegetables, like our friend who wants to plant under the oak tree.
Uh-huh.
Secrets to making it look good so your neighbors will be happy and you get plenty to eat. And then just tips on plants and how to design and plan for bringing birds and butterflies into the landscape, and a few beneficial insects too, some of the other good guys.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So that's Sunday.
Sunday at the Frontier Express Center. I always have to, Frontier Center. Downtown Milwaukee. So, yeah, I'll be at the Home Builders and Remodeler Show.
At 11 and again at 2.
Right. So thank you for mentioning. I hope to get to see a lot of the listeners there. It'll be a good time to see what we can do working on our homes and talk about improving our gardens as well.
Sounds perfect. Let's go to Susan in Oregon next. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
I'm commenting on the two callers ago, the gentleman that talked about broccoli.
Oh, yes.
This last spring, I just happened to get 20 free broccoli plants.
Oh, my goodness.
And my son was in FFA, and these were some plants that had not sold. So I took them home, and I planted them in a row, in a straight row, right along. I have a little fence, a chicken wire fence around my garden to keep the bunnies out. And I planted them in a straight row just inside my chicken fence. And I really had the most fun with that broccoli because I got a crop of the heads. But then after that, the entire summer and fall, and I think there might be even some flowerets now, I've just been trimming those little flowerets as they popped up, and there would be enough for a meal. And so I'm going to do the same thing this coming year because I just had so much fun. I didn't even mind the fact that they weren't large heads because I got such a nice crop of all those little heads.
Well, and you know what? Broccolini costs a lot more in the grocery store. And just think about it. It's really the,
yeah,
the things we've ignored for all these years. So
I actually think I enjoyed the little broccolini better than the actual heads. So I wanted to comment. I don't suppose a person needs 20 plants, but 10 plants would be very nice.
And, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because the other thing that I love to do is get the most out of anything I grow. And cabbage is another fun one to do. When you harvest your main head of cabbage, cut off right beneath the head but leave the lower leaves intact, and you'll get 4 or 5 small heads of cabbage. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for a small family, just a few plants of cabbage go a long way. Like you said, if you had 20 cabbage plants, that's a lot of kraut you'd be making. But thank you for sharing that, and that's great that you had good flavor all year long. That's excellent.
Thanks, Susan.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Appreciate the call. Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based gardening expert, with us here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Melinda Myers, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk. Great to have her along. Thank you very much for listening in as well. Appreciate it. And if you have a question for her, you can call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And if you have a photo or a question, you can also post it on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you can post there. And we've had some great photos already today. And some questions as well. Brian just sent us a note on Facebook, says, I'm a pumpkin growing failure.
I think we've all lost a few. So
yeah.
That helps.
He said, every year my plants look great and tend to take over a good chunk of the yard, but rarely produce anything but male blooms. The few pumpkins I've gotten over the past 7 years are embarrassingly small.
Okay. A couple of things, and it's a very common dilemma. A couple of things you're going to want to do, Brian, and I'm glad you asked because others have the same issue. Pumpkin, squash, watermelon love warm soil, and most of them are long season. So when you look at your seed packet, you know, time from planting to harvest will give you an idea of about when you'd harvest, but if it's a cool summer, it will take longer, warmer, a little bit shorter. That's one of the few crops that I often will use black weed barrier. I like organic mulches, shredded leaves, evergreen needles. But to warm the soil, if you use weed barrier, it keeps the weeds down, keeps the vines off the ground and the fruit off the ground, and you'll often get warming, so you'll get faster harvest. Or I'll often use the Rime, the season-extending fabrics, until they start to flower. And as he found out, the first flush are all male, the second flush are male and female. You need both to get pollination. So anything you can do to warm things up will speed up production. Making sure you start with fresh seed every year or seed that's been properly saved over winter. Often you'll get, I've had people tell me some of the things that pop out of their compost pile seem to produce better than the ones they planted. But think about how rich that soil is, so making sure your soil's well amended. Good sunny location, too. Pumpkins, tomatoes, peppers, the sunniest spot you've had. And I have a little yard, so when I do pumpkins every few years, I just have to have a pumpkin fix. I'll put them in a pot and then just let them trail over my patio, and it covers up, it's an old house and an old patio, so it covers up some of the sins of my patio. And it's kind of fun for my guests to watch it wander over the patio.
There you go. Well, Randy in Wisconsin Rapids, you are next. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Randy.
See, 2 years ago, I broke a patch for planting potatoes. It's probably about 12 by 15 feet. And I planted 25 baby reds and 25 gold rush, you know, when they get them cut up.
Yep.
Right.
I brought them from the store and all that stuff. They're clean. And I got beautiful potatoes. So then that was in 2009, I guess. In 2010, I thought, well, I'm really going to help this. And I had a compost pile that had been composting for, I know it was 2 years, probably three. And it was mostly lawn clippings. And I put it on there, and I really thought I was doing something wonderful. And I got absolutely no potatoes except around the perimeter where I really didn't mix in that compost. And I think that compost robbed the nitrogen from the soil.
What was the top of your... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wonder if there's something I can do to reverse that, or...
Well, did the top of your potato plants look good? You just didn't get the potatoes underground, or everything looked stunted?
The top of the potatoes looked fine, and you pull them up, it was just like, there's nothing there.
Okay. Good point. Sometimes, and usually compost is a low-nitrogen, slow-release form, and you're right to start going, okay, what did I do different? What could the impact be? Partially decomposed compost, you're right, can temporarily rob the nitrogen from soil. So I always say dig it in the fall, because by spring, it's usually decomposed and ready to go. That works. In your case, if it was three-year-old compost, it should have been fine. Grass clippings tend to be high nitrogen, so you might have had a little bit higher nitrogen content. And you may want to look at the phosphorus content in your soil, because nitrogen encourages stem and leaf growth. Sometimes excessive nitrogen, usually not an issue with compost, but sometimes can be, it can get leaf and stem growth at the expense of flowering, fruiting, and potentially development of the tubers, of the roots, the tuber like you had underground for your potato. You may want to start with the soil test, and Extension Service can help you with that. One of the cool things about Milorganite, which is an organic nitrogen fertilizer, but it's low nitrogen, the phosphorus is non-leaching. But what they found in research is that many of our soils have high to excessive levels of phosphorus and potassium, but it's tied up in the soil, not available to the plant. What they found is when those microorganisms work on the malorganite, it releases the phosphorus from the soil so it's available to the plant. What does that mean? Phosphorus to help with the development of those tubers underground or your potatoes. So if possible, get a soil test to find out where you're at. That will tell you what, if anything, you need to add so that you can have a better crop. If it is nitrogen related to compost, most of that's going to be used up or dealt with in the soil. The microorganisms would have been working on it pretty fast and furious. So that should be, you should be okay for this year, but I think a soil test will help make your efforts worthwhile just to be sure you don't need to add something else. Or try a little bit of malorganite when you work the soil in the spring, and that will help take care of some of those phosphorus issues.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Potatoes are always, I don't know, but I don't know if you've grown potatoes, Larry, but every time I've grown them, it's always that great mystery of, will there be anything underground when I harvest? Been lucky most part. I've had a couple bad harvests where I went, ooh, that didn't turn out too good.
Well, you know, watching Ruth Stout's garden, that film, and with her throwing the potatoes in hay, I think.
Yes, exactly.
She just threw it in there, and that was it. And she harvested these huge potatoes.
And, you know, there's some new potato bags out on the market, and they're basically made of weed barrier. And I've done them in pots, and in the old days we used to do tires before we learned about the whole cadmium and some of those concerns of the old days. But anything you can do to raise the bed in the straw, really reduce, you know, it's really just finding a place to provide support and make sure the plants can get nutrients they need. So that might be another strategy to try. I should have mentioned that raising the bed, too, helps with drainage, improves, warms up the soil. You get better development of those potatoes as well.
Gary and Rhinelander, we're on to you now. Hi, Gary.
Hi there. Hey, Larry, I really love your show and the guests that you have.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hey, I just moved into a new place in northern Wisconsin, Rhinelander, like saying, and it's in the middle of the woods, and the previous owner basically picked out a sunny patch in the middle of the yard and made that her garden. It probably gets about 80% of the sunlight. Now, I moved in sort of like fall, had no time to do anything with it. So it's basically a garden that was just left. What do I do in the springtime? Am I looking at a lot of extra work? And what I do, like, I'm a tomato eater.
Okay.
So I'm going to eat tomatoes and grow tomatoes, and I love flowers. And there is a fence around this for the critters not to get in. And so I like, you know, sort of like large tomato type or large sandwich type tomatoes. So the two things I'll probably be growing is mainly tomatoes and maybe some either honeysuckle or some kind of flower to go around the fence. But hopefully the deer won't eat, but maybe the butterflies and hummingbirds. So I need some suggestions in those areas.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because often we have to put our food garden either by choice or necessity right in front or the only sunny spot. And, you know, dressing up your fence will make it really pleasing for you to look at, which then makes it more inviting for you to go work. You know, a honeysuckle vine, those are not the invasive honeysuckles that we worry about. So those would be beautiful. And like you said, bring in the butterflies. What I would do is in the spring or even, you know, when you get those nice days late winter when the snow isn't on the ground and, you know, you can get out in the garden, because you're not sure what the disease pressure was, I mean, was it an annual garden, do you know? Was it her vegetables or a mix of things or you're not sure what all she had planted?
I'm not sure at all. I know that she tried several different things and she had her best luck in that spot. And I can see where there was a compost pile to the side of the yard as well.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if she's used it or what or how well she took care of it.
Okay. What I would probably suggest is since you're not sure if they're annuals, perennials, or what's in there, if you can identify the remains and you know it's an annual like a dead tomato, you might want to rip that stuff out and clean up the garden. Minimally, you might want to cut things back and wait to see what sprouts. You know, if she's got some perennials in there that you might want to keep or move around rather than pulling the whole plants out unless you're sure it's an annual. Then if the compost looks like soil, it's ready to use, or you might want to bring in some organic matter yourself that first year. And then as you see where the perennials are and coming up, and then, you know, repair those areas that look like this is where I'm going to put my tomato. So adding some compost to that area and really kind of working things up would be a great way to kind of get the garden ready. And this first year is probably going to be a little bit of an experiment for you to see what she has that you want to keep or move or change things out, kind of get a read on the growing conditions, you know, as the season progresses, the sun patterns change, as you know. So that might be a way to just go, I want my tomatoes, I want this, I want this. I'm planting those. And then kind of filling in as you find out what space is available. So the compost pile, if it looks like it's done, or at least the bottom, you could use that, bring in your own, get that compost pile going by adding new materials and turning occasionally. You know, screening is a great idea, whether you use shrubs on the inside or outside, you know, to kind of improve the view. And if deer, I'm guessing, are pretty big pressure, I'd probably keep anything you want to make sure it survives on the inside of the fence.
Yes.
So I hope that helps. It's really one of those things that's going to be a little bit of cleanup, what you know goes, wait and see what sprouts. I had one woman that came to visit me. I'd visit garden centers throughout the spring and fall, and she'd every week meet me at a different store and bring like 5 plants, and we'd identify them. And the next week she'd bring 5 more, so she wouldn't hold up the line. And after about 4 years, she came up to me and said, I think we've identified everything in the yard. And it was kind of fun because, you know, things would come into bloom or things would come in, and so we'd get to ID the plants, and she'd go back and add it to her list. And so, you know, it's not immediate, and you could do that immediately, get someone to come out. But I think we had fun traveling down that path together.
Sounds wonderful. Melinda Myers, our gardening guru from Milwaukee, our guest here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based gardening expert, author of more than 20 books, and with a great website as well. And Melinda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good to have you with us today. And give us that website again, would you please?
You bet. Melinda Myers, MYERS.com, and full of audio and video tips and frequently asked questions and answers. And, you know, be patient with me as you post. I'm trying to catch up with all of you. And if you have suggestions, we'd love to hear them. And I'd love to see pictures. I've been enjoying those that are posted on your Facebook. I also have a Facebook and Twitter account, Melinda Gardens, and Melinda Myers is my Facebook account as well. So love to hear from you. And, it's you know, this is what gardeners do best, to share. So trying to share what I know and pass it along and pass along what I learned from all of you.
Well, and it's a wonderful site. And
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having it up there. We have, at the Larry Mueller Show, I don't know if you have that up at all.
Yes, I do.
We've got something from Lana.
I was admiring her echinaceas with great for butterflies. They're beautiful.
That's a beautiful photograph. And were there some questions on there, too? She mentioned, Cindy wondered about honeysuckle vines. What are the varieties that are not invasive?
Okay, good point. The shrub forms of honeysuckles, like the amur and the tatarian, are the invasive ones. The vine types are not invasive here in Wisconsin. So you can grow things like sempervirens, which is sometimes called gold flame, and they have kind of a coral to a red almost with a yellow throat flower. Butterflies love. They'll produce some fruit, but we haven't found it to be an invasive problem here. Really, I haven't seen it invasive anywhere. The Japanese in some parts of the country are. There's also Dropmore Scarlet Honeysuckle, which is Linus Rex Brownii Dropmore Scarlet, which is a nice scarlet. Downside of the honeysuckle vines, they will get powdery mildew and heavy shade. I've grown mine in pretty heavy shade, still had flowers, but more mildew as the shade increased. Occasionally, you'll have problems with aphids. I'm usually a fan of letting the ladybugs move in and take care of them. The one year I did break out the insecticidal soap because there were just too many of them. But usually nature in my yard takes care of most things, but I can tolerate damage better than some gardeners. So those are two to look for. There's some really nice ones out there, and they do a nice job. Blue-green foliage bloom sporadically all season long, so you get good flowering. Great in full sun, they will tolerate shade. Again, watch for the mildew.
Patrick in Amherst Junction, it is your turn. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning, or good afternoon by now.
Yeah.
Linda, I have two questions for you. The first one is I have a fairly successful vegetable garden each year, but I have never been able to produce beets. My wife loves beets, and I'll get a little bit of a shoot that'll appear above the ground, but then I never get the beets themselves. And I'm wondering if you have any suggestions for that.
Yeah, root crops in general. And I'm going to kind of give the whole gamut of answers to help you as well as a lot of people have this problem. Good drainage is critical. For those gardening in heavier clay soils, adding organic matter and using a raised garden helps a lot. Even if you just take your existing soil and make the row raised a few inches, you'll be amazed at the difference. Thinning is very important. You know, we were talking about seed tapes earlier.
Yeah.
Thinning, I think it's one of the hardest jobs ever. The good thing about group beets, though, is you can eat the greens. So if it helps you when you're harvesting those, picking them, think of harvesting them, using those in salads and stir fries and things. So thinning is the next important thing. Make sure there's enough space between the plants so that the root, the underground portion, has enough space to grow. Check your soil. Phosphorus is another issue. Now, I mentioned earlier that a lot of our soils are high to excessive in phosphorus. When I worked for Extension, I watched soil tests over 20-some years, and they kept increasing because we did 10-10-10, 12-12-12 fertilizers. But they often, the phosphorus is tied up in the soil. So a soil test will tell you, so before you add more. And then again, using organic matter, as I mentioned before, the Milorganite, which helps when the microorganisms work on it, release the phosphorus that's found in the soil. So a soil test will tell you if you need to add more, and if you've got plenty, then you might need to work on releasing it, and that's one way to do it, organic matter. So you might want to try those things. Containers are another good option, too, because you control everything in there, and you've got good drainage, small pot, you know, maybe. And then I love to mix bull's blood beets, really deep, deep red leaves, beautiful with flowers and containers, and then I can have just a few beets here and there. It won't be a huge harvest, but it might be enough to get by until the main crop comes in.
Okay.
Good points.
Yeah, another question is, I've had a raised strawberry bed for about 4 years, and the last couple of years it's really diminished, and I didn't get any strawberries this past year. And I'm wondering if I need to yank that whole thing out and start anew, or if there's any way to rejuvenate that strawberry bed.
Great question. I want to put a plug in for Extension, because University of Wisconsin Extension has great publications, and they've got some good things on strawberries. I am going to answer your question, but when you hang up and go, what did she say, I think you'll find that really helpful. How you manage your strawberries determines in the type you grow. So, you know, if you want to grow, if you have those that produce runners, typically what you'll do is you'll take the parent plant originally. After the runners get reestablished, you'll till up that portion where the parent plants were growing, add some organic matter. Then those runners will send out runners that you can train back where the parent plants were. So you're kind of just moving your planting bed around. But what sometimes happens with a mass planting is you get, you know, you kind of lose track of the rows, and it's hard to, you know, what do I get rid of and what do I start? So you may want to look in your planting bed and see if there's are there distinct areas where you have younger plants that look healthier, then till up between those, add some compost. You know, if the plants were diseased at all, you might want to dig them up and get them rid of them. Otherwise, you can till those in with compost, fertilizer if needed, and then as those young plants produce runners, if they are the running producer type, they'll send them back in. If they don't produce runners, then that's a chance, too, to bring in new plants in between and replace as needed. I hope that makes sense.
It does. Thank you very much.
You bet. Good luck and have fun. Nothing beats fresh from the garden
store. Oh, and beets, I love them grilled.
You know, and I never was a beet fan because I grew up with a mom that just served them pickled out of the can. And until I've, as an adult now, grilled beets, beet salads
so
with gold
good.
And red,
They're
we're
so
all
going
to need to have lunch.
That's right. Oh, and we have another cool picture from Bob on my Facebook page. Huge believer in compost, wood ash, trace minerals, and organic chicken manure. My plants were exceptionally tall, 8-foot sun gold tomatoes loaded with fruit. 13-foot sunflowers, 5-foot kale potatoes bigger than my fist, not bragging, rejoicing, and giving thanks for the earth's bounty.
You know, and I don't think any gardener, they might be a little green, especially the potatoes, but yeah. I think it's great, and that's what gardeners are so good at. One thing I want to mention about wood ash, if you're in an area with a lot of high pH, you know, a lot of the southern parts of the state, wood ash tends to be very alkaline or sweet, so you want to be careful, either mix it in with your compost. You know, if you're in central Wisconsin and northern Wisconsin, your soils tend to be more acidic, so you know, using it directly is okay, but for those of us with alkaline soils, mix it in with that compost before you add it to the soil. But, yeah, the picture, if you're not on Larry's Facebook, you need to check it out. You will be a little green with envy.
Boy. Robin in Portage, it's your turn. Hi, Robin.
Good afternoon, Larry and Melinda. I am standing at my kitchen window right now looking longingly at my vegetable garden.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Oh, my. Well, anyway, I have this problem with green peppers.
Okay.
Not only with green peppers. Years ago, I had abundant crops. I have a raised bed garden, and I rotate my crops every year. But the last 3 years in a row, this has happened to me. I will get tons of flowers. Then they will start to form a fruit. And then the stem turns yellow. And they fall off.
Plants are looking okay. Leaves look fine.
The leaves look fine. Everything looks great.
If you cut open the pepper, have you ever cut open to see, are there any kind of little tiny seeds forming? Or
they're too tiny.
Okay.
They're just very,
small.
They're not even the size of a pea yet.
Okay.
They fall off.
Okay.
And as I said, I've rotated them. And in fact, last year I took them out of my vegetable garden, put them up by my house where my flower garden is, and I had tomatoes planted next to them. I was trying to make work easier for me this last summer.
It's always a good thing with gardening.
And my tomatoes flourished. I mean, I couldn't give them away. I had so many. But the peppers did the same gall darn thing, and this is 3 years in a row. I'm confused.
Well, that's weird.
You know, peppers are very sensitive to a couple things.
Cold, for one.
Cool temperatures and hot temperatures can cause the blossoms to fall or failure to fruit. A soil test is always a good starting point. I mentioned activated compost earlier, and Purple Cow is one of those activated composts full of microbial. It's got green sand, and it's got landscape trimmings composted, vermicompost, worm compost. But some of the things that I've seen from a lot of organic farmers using it in their production, as well as a lot of backyard gardeners that I use it in my containers and my garden, is it builds the tilt of the soil. And peppers are a picky plant. People either swear they have the best year or they don't have anything. It's nothing in between. So you might want to try, you know, that combination of a soil test for sure, a little bit of Milorganite to boost that phosphorus, and then try a little bit of Purple Cow, definitely some compost in there to see if you can build the soil. Make sure your drainage is good. And I'm assuming you get new plants every year.
Every year. And I grow them from a plant.
Yep.
Okay.
And last year I actually dug up this flower bed because it was old, and I put all new soil in there, and I did use Milorganite.
Okay,
yeah.
For fertilizing, okay.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to try adding some compost in there just to make sure you've got good drainage, and if it still continues, you might want to take a sample to the Extension Service and see if they can take a look at it. You know, sometimes what you're describing and I'm picturing aren't really exactly the same. So that might help if they can take a look at it. Let's hope you don't need that this year.
Oh, I hope not either.
I hope
not
either.
Love peppers.
Yeah, I know. And boy, and this year was a little cool. So I met people that most people had a little struggle with bell peppers. Hot peppers did okay, but a lot of people were struggling with their bell peppers. But and then you'd meet the people that said, oh, I had hundreds. I was freezing them. And, yeah, I don't want to hear that. But try a little bit of compost and see if that helps. And then, again, take it to the Extension Service. If if the problem develops, so they can take a look at it.
Okay. Well, wish me luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. By the way, there was a question about Milorganite. Someone wondered, is it really possible to use Milorganite on edible, you know, like potatoes and so forth?
Yeah, I'm glad they asked. Maybe it was about 20 years ago they took the product off the market because there was concerns about heavy metal. And they were within the federal guidelines, but they cleaned that up, and they voluntarily took edibles off the label. They test daily and weekly, so it's really heavily monitored because they're very concerned about the health and safety of everyone. And so it is way below. It meets the EPA's exceptional quality standards. It's beyond that. They test more than they have to. They keep the levels much lower than is required, so they're monitoring on a regular basis. You know, one of the cool things about gardening is you get to choose what you put on your garden. I use Milorganite for my edibles, and I feel good about that. But, you know, one of the things is if you don't, then keep it on your ornamentals. But, you know, I've seen the research, and the cool thing they're doing now is they're pumping methane from nearby landfill as a heat source. To heat, because they do drying to kill pathogens and things in the process. It's really dead microorganisms, not what everybody thinks Milorganite is. And so they're really being energy efficient, which I think is pretty cool, too. You know, it's kind
absolutely.
Of, again, recycling a waste product, putting it to a good use, and then trying to reduce the footprint, the carbon footprint as well.
Let's turn to Arnie in Plainfield next. Hi, Arnie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. You just about answered my question.
Oh, okay.
However, I would still question, I mean, as I understand, Milorganite is a product of sewage treatment systems.
It's a byproduct of the wastewater treatment, right.
Right. And there's been some issues that I would still wonder about if they're testing for that, in that, like, there's contraceptives and all kinds of other chemicals that go through those systems. Are they truly getting that out? I mean, I use Milorganite on my ornamentals and so forth around the yard, but to use it on my actual garden edibles, I still am a little leery. So
yeah, they are monitoring the whole pharmaceutical issue. You know, it's the water I drink, so I'm really
right.
Yeah.
But they are monitoring for that and other products. I think that's a constant, you know, things are evolving and they are always constantly watching for it. You know, not try to pick on any other products. I think we all as gardeners need to be aware of what testing is happening with organics and manures and things like that. All products, commercial. So those are good questions to ask of anybody. If you visit their website, there's some information. But you're right. I think those are just concerns that, you know, you got to be, I'm okay with it, you know, and I've been using it for years. But that's a choice I've made, and I've seen the data. But, you know, you're right. You got to do what makes you comfortable, and that's part of the joy of gardening.
That's right. Thanks a lot, Arnie, for calling. Mary in Whitewater will give you a chance. Hi, Mary.
Hi. This is for the gentleman who called several callers ago, and for Melinda also, about the Japanese honeysuckle vine that he wanted to plant along the perimeter of his garden.
Mm-hmm.
The native ones, there are quite a few native ones, and they are hard to come by. But there are a lot of Japanese varieties that are showing up in the nurseries, and they are prohibited under Wisconsin's invasive species rule, NR40, by the Wisconsin DNR. And I'm pretty upset with the invasive species that are coming through our nurseries. I bought one by mistake in a Janesville nursery, and it was called Lonicera japonica haliana improved. And I thought, great, maybe this has improved over the invasive Japanese varieties, and I can plant it in my yard, and the birds will not carry the seeds away and disperse them. As it turned out, I contacted the DNR, and there are a lot of Japanese honeysuckles on the market that are banned. And so I reported it, and they supposedly reported it to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. I went back to the nursery's website. They still carried two banned invasive species, the Japanese honeysuckle, as well as variegated porcelain vine. So I wrote them a personal letter and told them that I was a disappointed customer, and that I would not purchase anything from them again until they remove these plants from their retail stores.
Well, thank you for that. The two I mentioned were not the Japanese, so I appreciate you pointing out that I try to keep up on the DNR list of invasives. I haven't seen that it's been a problem. I know they're banning some plants that are issues in other states, so I appreciate you giving us that update. And the two that I mentioned weren't the Japanese, so thank you, though, for pointing that out. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mary, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Back to my Facebook page for a minute. And, Melinda, I don't know if you're there.
I am still there. I'll need to
update and take a look at the plant.
Okay.
From Leslie.
Oh, yay. It looks like a, well, I was going to say a baneberry at first.
I'm not sure what it is.
Well,
it's really cool.
It is. I think it's a baneberry. It looks like if it's an herbaceous plant, Actea, which is baneberry, the white baneberry versus the red baneberry. Those fruit kind of remind me a little bit of dogwood, but the pedicel, the red stems are a little too thick. So check out baneberry, Actea, A-C-T-E-A. And I think it's the white variety, and it's a native. It likes moist, shady conditions, likes a little acidic soil. I have a red baneberry in my backyard. I love it. It's beautiful. It's my soil is a little too sweet for it, but I do a lot of organic mulches and things. So, you know, check that out, because I think I can't see the leaves clearly, but I bet that's what it is.
And for those who aren't
looking at the picture
on Facebook, it's sort of some red stems and very white. Almost like a cotton ball.
Yeah, with a black dot in the center. And it looks like if it's a baneberry, it has somewhat compound leaves. And an herbaceous plant that grows a couple feet tall, shade tolerant. Yeah, thank you, Larry. I can see it, so I assumed everyone else could. So check that out and see if that matches, Leslie. I love doing a search, an image search, because you can send me a picture, and I can see parts of it, and then I can send you, and you can do research and go, yeah, those leaves look like mine, and that's about the right height. So check that out, Leslie.
Lynette in Richfield, your turn. Hi, Lynette.
Hi. One of these days I'm going to get a compost pile going. But in the meantime, can I just throw out my organic kitchen matter, scraps and things like that, into the garden and just and rotate those or rototill those in the spring?
You know what? I grew up with a dad who we would haul the scraps, dig a hole and bury them. And the benefit of that is, you know, it helps. It looks better. It's a little neater. In the winter, obviously, that's not an option. What you may want to do is dig them in the rows in between, because, you know, we talked about compost temporarily tying up nitrogen as the microorganisms break it down. So you want to put it in between your plants so you're not temporarily robbing the nutrients from the plants that are growing. But, you know, trench composting is an old method. A friend of mine did wide row plantings, and he composted in trenches between. So he just put all his yard waste, his kitchen scraps, cover them with soil. As the season went, he'd walk on it. It broke them up, so they'd break down quickly. The next year, the planting beds became the trenches where he'd compost. His trenches became the planting beds. And so he composted right in his garden, and he did it, as you know, throughout the season. Just dug a hole, threw the debris in there, and then it amended the soil, and then that's where he planted next year.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is. There's, you know, I'm glad you asked the question. There's so many different ways to compost that it doesn't have to be a pile. You know, I think it's creativity, and gardeners are good at that. So finding what works for you is going to make it easier to make it happen.
Thanks very much for calling, Lynn. Appreciate it. We have, boy, we're about out of time here, Melinda. Oh, my goodness.
It always goes fast. I really appreciate it. It's always a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. And your website again, melindamyers.com. We actually have it up on my Facebook page, too. So we're linked to that. So we will definitely, if you want to take a look at Melinda's site, you can just go directly to melindamyers.com or go to my Facebook page and get a link there.
Great.
And you're tomorrow, is it? Or Sunday, you're going to be?
I'll be at the Milwaukee Builders and Remodeler Show doing two presentations, so join me then. And then come join us on January 14th, either for the Garden Walk in the morning or the Family Fun Event in the afternoon. And proceeds go to Children's Education, or join me virtually if you can't make it in person.
You're a peach. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Larry. Have a great weekend.
You too. Melinda Myers, our guest. She will be back. She's wonderful, isn't she? Milwaukee-based gardening expert. Monday, we talk with Dr. Mike Fiore about quitting smoking, and then we'll look at the we'll talk with the author of Homegrown and Handmade. Stay with us.